Y'all welcome, a warm Brazos Point welcome to Jim Martin, our friend from IJM.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It really is a pleasure for me to get to be here with you this morning. I have known about Brazos Point for several years now and have had a chance to meet some of you. There was a big contingent of you that came to IJM's conference last September, Liberate, that I got to meet on the way out the door, essentially, when the whole thing was over. And it's just been a joy for me to know about the work that you are doing in locally here and in connection with IJM all over the world, and particularly in Southeast Asia. So I'm grateful that it's me that gets to be here this morning to share Freedom Sunday with you. I'm gonna jump right in. I wanna tell you the story this morning of three people. And we're gonna begin our story in a little bit of a hard place. I wanna begin telling you about a man named Dom. He's the first person in our story. Dom lives in a rural Cambodian village, and he struggles, like so many people do, to provide food for his family. So he grows rice in a local field, and he fishes at a local pond, and this is really just to fulfill his responsibility to make sure there's food on the table. And there isn't always enough, but he's making ends meet somehow. And then one day in Dom's village, this man named Kiev shows up. And Kiev is telling Dom this story about how there is great opportunity in the Gulf of Thailand on the fishing boats. And if Dom were to travel to the Gulf of Thailand and get work on a fishing boat there, he could make more money there than he could ever imagine making in his Cambodian village. That's a pretty good offer, because Dom is looking for a way just to set his family on a more stable financial foundation. And so Kiev goes on to say, you know, it's not just the money that you could make, but I'll actually do all the paperwork for you, and I'll provide all of the costs for you to travel through rural Cambodia, over the border, and into the Gulf of Thailand. So convinced that this may be Dom's only opportunity to actually help his family in a significant way, he says yes to Kiev. And Kiev does, he's as good as his word at the beginning, at least, and he provides the paperwork and pays for all the transit, and they travel through rural Cambodia and across the border into Thailand, and then they make it all the way to the Gulf of Thailand. And that's when things start to change. When they get to the Gulf, Kiev essentially summarily puts Dom onto a boat that goes straight out to sea. And it takes a little while for Dom to actually realize what's happened, but he's actually been sold to this boat captain, and he's headed out to sea, and he's going to actually stay out there for months, because they figured out a way to resupply this boat from shore by other boats. So Dom finds himself out at sea, months on end, working 18 to 20 hour days hauling heavy fish nets. It's dangerous work. They're forced to work when they're sick. There's about 12 other Cambodian men on the boat with them. And for simple mistakes, the stakes are really high. For simple mistakes, they get beaten. Dom has seen men thrown overboard and left for dead. It's brutal work. And he's out at sea, far out at sea, thousands of miles out at sea, in fact, beyond contact with his family, beyond help, and beyond hope. Now, of course, this isn't just happening to Dom. It's happening to thousands and thousands of other men in rural Cambodia and through this whole trafficking corridor between Cambodia and Thailand. Recruiters travel this corridor between rural Cambodia and the Gulf of Thailand, gathering people to work in the fishing industry off these boats in Thailand. This, of course, is all part of a global problem. And it's a problem not just for Dom, but it can feel so large and so completely overwhelming for people like you and me that once we hear about it, we wish we never had, because it gets under our skin a little bit. I want to ask you a few questions just to give you a sense of the scope of this issue as we sit here this morning. How many people would you imagine have had the experience that Dom is having? How many people would you imagine in our world today woke up this morning essentially as the property of another person? How many people would you imagine are enslaved in today's world? Well, it's hard to find data on this, of course, but the best research we know about is being done by an organization called the Walk Free Foundation out of Australia. And they publish something every year called the Global Slavery Index that tries to answer that question. And according to the 2018 data collected by the Walk Free Foundation, the answer to that question is 40 million. There are 40 million people living enslaved by other people in today's world. That's more than at any other time in recorded history. Now, another question: of those 40 million, how many would you imagine might be children? Children who woke up this morning enslaved to other people. Well, according to that same research, the percentage is about 25%. About 25% of them are children. So that's a 10 million children who woke up this morning as the property of another person. How much money would you imagine is involved in this illicit industry? How much money do you think traffickers like Kiev are making off of their crimes? Well, it turns out the best figure we can find is about $150 billion a year is being made by traffickers. $150 billion. To put that in context, $150 billion is more than the top six companies in the U.S. earn any year combined. That is a lot of money. There's a lot of money at stake for those who are willing to oppress the poor in these ways. Now, as I said, I want to acknowledge that if this information is new to you especially, it can feel crushing. How could it not? You might even want to just sort of forget about it, to pack it all back away and just not think about it anymore. But here's the thing I want you to know this morning. We at IJM, we've been at this for about 20 years now, over 20 years. We are more hopeful now than we ever have been about seeing a solution to this problem in our lifetime. We're more hopeful now than we ever have been. And that's what this story is about this morning. In large part, this has to do with responses like from churches just like Brazos Point Fellowship. Churches all over the world have over the last decade and more, have made these courageous steps to actually engage the issue in a meaningful way. It's been really amazing for us to watch, and one of the measures of that for us, frankly, has been Freedom Sunday. We started this little initiative just a few years ago in 2016 with just 300 churches, really just like a handful of churches that were close to IJM started Freedom Sunday with us in 2016. That was 300 churches in the U.S. Fast forward to 2019, and this year on Freedom Sunday, we have over 14,000 churches that are participating in 37 different countries around the world, right? The church is waking up to this issue of injustice. They're realizing that Freedom Sunday as a concept may be brand new, but justice as an issue in our world is an ancient problem. In fact, God's passion for justice is as old as the Ancient of Days himself. And I think this is actually what is waking the church up to this real issue. More and more churches have come to this understanding that God's passion for justice exists throughout the entire Bible. Let me give you just a couple of examples. One of them, in Psalm 89, verse 14, the psalmist says this to God, right? This is ancient Hebrew poetry, trying to say this beautiful thing about the nature and character of God. So this one verse says this, righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Steadfast love and faithfulness go before you. So here's the psalmist saying that the foundation of the rule and reign of God is built upon righteousness and justice, right? This is part of God's character that goes all the way back to the beginning. And as so many churches are aware, the concept of justice doesn't just appear here and there in the Bible, it's all over the place. And to just give you a sense of that, I want to talk about this Old Testament scholar that I love, whose name is Christopher J.H. Wright. Now, an Old Testament scholar is just someone who's a specialist in the Hebrew portion of the Bible, the first 39 books. Christopher Wright says that there is no genre, there is no type of biblical literature that does not address the issue of injustice. It's scattered throughout the whole Bible. Right? And further, he says, the Old Testament itself deals with the issue of injustice with more frequency than any other issue except for idolatry. Right? So the Old Testament is talking about justice more than any other issue except idolatry, the worship of false gods. The entire Bible is steeped in God's passion for justice. Let me just give you two more examples. One, the prophet Micah, who's trying to help the people of God understand what God desires from them and for them, says these famous words. He has told you, God has told you, O mortal, what is good and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God, right? And it's helpful for us to actually pay attention that the prophet Micah is helping us understand of all the things that God requires of us, they actually fall into three simple categories. Do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with God. It's a helpful and a memorable formula. And then when we fast forward to the New Testament, Jesus appears on the scene in Palestine, and he lives quietly, really, for 30 years, right? And then he transitions from his private life into a public life of ministry, and he does so in this really poignant way. He walks into the synagogue in Nazareth, and he's the sort of scripture reader for the day in that service. So he's handed a scroll of the scriptures, and it happens to be from the book of Isaiah. So Jesus unrolls the scroll in that synagogue on that morning, and he reads the following words from the prophet Isaiah. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release for the captives and recovery of sight for the blind, to let the oppressed go free and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then, as Jesus sits down and all the eyes of everyone in the synagogue are sort of focused upon him, he sits down and he says these following words to everyone. "Today, these words have been fulfilled in your hearing." Right? This is Jesus saying, clearly saying that he is the fulfillment of this prophetic word from Isaiah, that he is identifying himself as the long-awaited Messiah. And he's doing so by connecting himself with God's character of justice from the book of Isaiah. So my story began with Dom and his experience of injustice and the suffering that he experienced at the hands of this trafficker named Kiev. He's in the Gulf of Thailand. He's on this boat. I want to continue the story by talking about the second person. The second person in my story is a young man named Stephen. Stephen's just a young guy. He's recently graduated from college. His girlfriend, whom he's deeply in love with, Melissa, has just gotten a job with the U.S. Foreign Service and moved from Arkansas, where they grew up, to Washington, D.C. And they're not married yet, but he's smitten. And so he follows her to D.C., and he does what you do when you're new in a city like that and you're single. He joins a church, and he looks at a bunch of church bulletin boards trying to find a place, an apartment that he can live in, because it's a kind of an expensive city. And so he finally finds this young man who's got an apartment and is looking for a roommate, and this guy, Andrew, says, "Yeah, Steve, come and live with me." So Stephen moves in with Andrew. It turns out Andrew works for International Justice Mission. Now, Andrew's job is, he's sort of an administrative coordinator for our Southeast Asia operations at that point. And they become friends, and they talk, as roommates do, about all kinds of things. And a couple things they find themselves talking about with frequency are this idea of God's called, passionate call to the work of justice. And what might that mean? In fact, Stephen is getting interested in the possibility of eventually working for IJM, and this is part of the conversation that they're having. And then secondly, Andrew is telling Stephen about IJAM's work in Southeast Asia. And one of the stories that sticks with Stephen is this project that we had just finished in Southeast Asia, in the Philippines actually, called Project Lantern. So I'm going to take a little digression here to tell you about Project Lantern because it actually fits into the story here. So Project Lantern was a first-of-its-kind project in Southeast Asia where IJAM received enough funding to actually begin work in a whole new place, anti-trafficking work. We chose to do this in the Philippines' second largest metropolitan area, an area called Cebu. And what we did was went in and measured the level of victimization of young girls in the brothel systems in metropolitan Cebu. So we had a sense of what the baseline of the problem was. And then we ran operations for 4 years. We wanted to rescue some of the victims that were entrapped in the brothels. We wanted to bring prosecution against those that were committing those crimes and just see if we couldn't reduce the overall prevalence of victimization of minor girls by 20%. We thought, if we can do that in 4 years, that will be saying something. The goals we set, frankly, were quite modest. We wanted to see about 125 rescues over 4 years. So go in and do the work of rescuing 125 people, seeing 75 perpetrators actually charged with crimes, the crimes of human trafficking, and then have several of those begin to go into prosecution in the court system, and at the end of 4 years to see one or two that were very close to judgment. That was the whole sort of shape of the project. So by God's grace, over the course of 4 years, we actually hit or exceeded all of those goals. We didn't rescue 125 people, we rescued 259. We didn't see 75 charges brought, we saw 107 charges brought. There were 62 active prosecutions at the end of 4 years, and the first of those was actually beginning to come to conclusion. Now, that all sounds great, to think that 259 young girls were actually rescued out of their nightmare. From a certain perspective, how fantastic and life-changing from that for them. But from another, if you're looking at the scope of the problem, even just in Cebu in the Philippines, it sort of seems like a drop in the bucket, right? So what we were really interested in was what's the end result going to be? What's the end result on the prevalence of the crime going to be? So we invited a group of independent criminologists to come and examine the work and do an assessment of if the crime had been reduced, if the overall prevalence of the crime had been reduced. So they come in and they do their assessment, and they didn't find that the crime was reduced by 20%. They found that it was reduced by an astonishing 79%. So there were 79% fewer minors in the brothel systems at the end of 4 years than there had been at the beginning of the project. That's what that means, right? So the Philippines government, we shared these results with them, and they're thrilled, and they're essentially saying, okay, where do we do this next? So we went to Metro Manila and repeated the project over 4 years and saw a 75% reduction there, and then went to this area of the Philippines called Angeles City, Pampanga, and we saw an 86% reduction over 4 years there. This is wholesale change of the performance of the public justice system in the nation of the Philippines. And this story really captured Stephen, this sense that people representing the church could be part of this kind of change in the world in the face of such intractable and difficult problems. So fast forward through the story a little bit. Stephen does actually end up getting a job at IJM. He works for about 18 months at IJM in our South Asia, India operations. And he's very busy during this time. He's still busily wooing Melissa, and he's successful, and they get married actually during those 18 months. And then she gets assigned to a Central American country as part of her foreign service commitment. And so Stephen has to leave his job at IJM, and they go and they serve for 3 years overseas. And then when that posting is done, they come back to the United States, they move back to their native Arkansas, and Steve finds himself again looking for a job. So they're going to church, and Stephen goes out for coffee with a friend that he's met at church, and finds out that this guy is actually working as part of to build a corporate social responsibility arm of a company called Walmart, the world's largest company. And companies were becoming more and more interested in doing this back in 2014 or so, it was, because there had been two tragedies in Bangladesh, two garment factories. One had burned down, another had collapsed, and people had been killed and seriously hurt. And so a lot of companies were examining their supply chains. So Stephen gets a job with this guy, actually, at building out this corporate social responsibility arm. And they start talking about problems in Walmart's supply chain. And one of the problems that they're talking about is the fact that Walmart is buying shrimp from the Gulf of Thailand. And they have this sense that they know that it's tainted by slavery. But they keep inspecting their factories. They're doing what they can, but they can't find where the slavery is happening, right? They can't lock it down. They have a sense that it's actually happening offshore, but they don't know how to document that. And so Stephen says, well, you know, if you're looking to reduce slavery in the corporate supply chain here in the Gulf of Thailand, then the best organization I know that's doing that kind of work is IJM. You should talk to International Justice Mission. And so the next year, this is 2014 now, Stephen and his new boss, they come up to DC to have a conversation with IJM about the possibility of reducing slavery in the Thai shrimp fishery. And so they sit down with several leaders from IJM, including Stephen's old friend Andrew, and they review in much more depth the results and what IJM had learned from the Project Lantern in the Philippines. And Walmart then decides, this actually looks pretty good to us. We're going to fund a year-long exploration into what can be done about this. So this is the beginning of IJM's work in the Gulf of Thailand. So we go and we actually engage with every government official we can find, every non-governmental agency that's working in this area. We do a whole bunch of academic research, and we develop with some clarity a sense of the scope of the problem in the Gulf of Thailand. And so at the end of that year, Andrew actually has deployed, and he's part of this research study. At the end of that year, Walmart says, great, let's start an office there and begin working on the long-term issue of cross-border trafficking between Cambodia and Thailand. So this is how the story actually comes back to Dom, of course. Dom ends up being stuck at sea in various boats for 6 years. 6 years of this kind of suffering, out of contact with his family. Of course, none of the money that he's been promised has been given to him or sent back to his family, right? And then at some point, one of the boats that he's on ends up fishing illegally in Indonesian waters, and the Indonesian authorities actually confiscate the boat. And this is how he sort of gets out of his situation. He's not rescued. Nobody goes to jail for committing these crimes against him. He's just sort of cast upon the shore, and he finds his way home. And when he gets home, he realizes his son, who despaired of Dom ever coming home, actually connected with the same trafficker and was trafficked to the port of Thailand and himself is on a boat. So Dom winds up at home and finds out that this has been going on. All of this is occurring just about the time when IJM is starting its field office in Bangkok, Thailand, under this Walmart partnership. One of the very first things that the IJM team does is they begin training the police in what's called forensic interview techniques. So how do you interview a survivor of trauma in a way that is going to help them tell the story so that you can gather all the information you need to actually help them and other people who might be suffering the same thing? So IJM sets up several of these interview training seminars, and they're looking for people who've recently come off boats in Thailand, and who shows up at the first one but Dom. So Dom participates in one interview, and then he participates in another interview, and it's largely because of his good information and several other men being able to share their story in these training seminars that IJM is able to work with local authorities to discover that there is a network of people that are working this corridor between Cambodia and Thailand, and they're able to work with Cambodian authorities to bring charges against three of them. And this is the first of its kind, the first cross-border sort of trafficking charges that are filed. They go to court, and Dom and his son, who is eventually recovered, are actually able to testify in this landmark trial where they are able to stand up in court and tell the truth about what was done to them. And these three traffickers were convicted of their crimes and went to jail. Right? And this sends out a message to everybody who's engaging in this work that it's no longer safe. Right? You could actually get caught. You could actually go to jail. And due to Dom's good work, traffickers like Kiv are not able to do the things that they were doing so freely with impunity before. And so IJM continues working on this. In the next year, there are five more traffickers in that same ring that are brought to justice through a similar process, a trial, an engagement, and then they're sentenced as traffickers and they go to jail. Today, Walmart has committed to ongoing work. There's another grant that they've issued to IJM, and together with the State Department, IJM now has a permanent office in Bangkok that is working on this cross-border trafficking issue in the Thai fisheries. The interesting thing about the story is that Andrew, actually, Stephen's friend, Stephen is now still working at Walmart. He's working on the partnership from that side. Andrew has continued to grow in his career, and he became actually IJM's subject matter expert on slavery in the Thai fisheries. And just this year, Andrew was appointed to become the field office director of IJM's Bangkok office. So here he is. I just want to ask you not to take a photo of that picture just for security reasons. But I talked to both of these guys as I was preparing this this sermon, and the thing that's most interesting to me is that neither of them really saw this coming, right? You tell the story backwards, you get the sense of these miraculous links that are connected and all these surprises. The thing that I walked away with was how glorious it is that both these guys, Stephen and Andrew, are following in the footsteps of Jesus, right? The Spirit of the Lord is upon them because he has anointed them to bring good news to the poor. He has sent them to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free and to break every yoke. Their goal, Stephen's goal as part of Walmart, Andrew's goal as part of IJM, is actually to eradicate slavery in the Thai fisheries. And I think we may actually see that happen over the next 5 to 10 years. They're going to tell you, though, that they're more surprised than anyone at how all this has turned out. They're thrilled, but they never would have seen it coming, as I said. So this leads me to the third person in my story this morning. So just briefly, I want to talk about the third person, and that is you, Brazos Point Fellowship. Because you have already played a role in all of this. Your church's support has been invaluable to Andrew as he's tried to engage in this work on the ground. Invaluable to us as we've continued to build this movement, this anti-slavery movement. It's been invaluable to us, and we couldn't be more grateful. So I want to suggest a little assignment for you all. There's a team from Brazos Point Fellowship that's actually going to Cambodia to visit with the IJM field office there in November. Now, some of you sitting here may be part of that team. Many of you are not, but I want to give you a little bit of an assignment. I'm sure that while the team is deployed, you actually will be praying for them as we prayed for the other Southeast Asia team this morning. So I want to ask you to just stay mentally and emotionally connected to that team, to the work of that team. Just be aware of them as they prepare to go, as they travel there and are on the ground, and then as they return home. And pray for them. Pray for them on Sunday morning and throughout the week. And then when they get back, I want you to do this. I want you to ask them how the trip went. Now, I'm sure what they're going to say is, oh, it was awesome, and that's not necessarily because the team in Cambodia is awesome, though they are awesome. But they're probably going to say something like this, and it may be something that you've heard before. They're probably going to say something like, we went hoping that in some way we could be a small blessing to the people that we were serving. But what we found out was that we received way more blessing than we were able to give. I want you to listen for that. And I want you to not be surprised by it, because it actually, it's a promise from the scriptures. I mentioned that Jesus quoted from read from the prophet Isaiah when he read himself, inaugurated himself into ministry in that Nazareth synagogue. He was reading from what we have in our Bibles as Isaiah 61. If you back up just three chapters before that, you have these amazing words from Isaiah. He says, is not this the fast that I choose? This is Isaiah speaking for God, who is speaking to us, God's people. Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice and to undo the thongs of the yoke and to let the oppressed go free and to break every yoke? Now, you may be aware that a yoke is actually this large wooden thing that fits over the shoulders of huge animals like oxen so that their work can be guided and controlled. It harnesses their work, essentially. And so it gets used as a metaphor for slavery in the Bible and in all kinds of other writing as well. So the prophet is saying, if you will do these things, if you will break yokes of oppression, then your light shall break forth like the dawn and your healing shall spring up quickly. Then your vindicator shall go before you and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you shall call and the Lord will answer. You shall cry for help and he will say, here I am. God makes these extravagant promises to those who would join him in the fight for justice. It should be no surprise to Stephen or to Andrew or to me or to any of us that when we join this fight, one of the most profound things we experience is actually the presence and the blessing of God himself. So I want to invite every single one of you this morning to join in this fight. Over the last 20 years at IJM, we have simply marveled at the way the church has rallied to this work, at the sheer number of faithful people who have jumped into the very middle of the struggle. Thousands have done so by choosing to become what we call freedom partners. A freedom partner sustains the work by praying essentially for the end of slavery in our lifetime, for advocating for justice, investing in the rescue and restoration of survivors, and accountability for perpetrators. Right now in Cambodia and Thailand, the reality is all the power is still on the side of the oppressors. And that equation is just beginning to shift. And I want to invite you to throw some of your weight on the side of the oppressed this morning. I want to invite you to change the equation, to put your power, your advocacy, your resources on the side of the oppressed. Some of you have done this already. You've become freedom partners, and we're super grateful for that. But for those of you that haven't had the opportunity, Pastor Greg has made it easy for you. I want you to actually pull out your bulletin, because inside there's a little envelope. A Freedom Partner envelope. And I want you to actually consider this. There are lots of options for responses, and all of them are great. So if you're being called to pray for this team that's going out to Cambodia, please do that. If you're interested in looking for jobs at IJM, we still have key positions that we're trying to fill, then get on the web this afternoon and look at what the open positions are and see if it might not be a fit for you. If you're interested in connecting in this way through becoming a freedom partner, then please consider that. Here's what we've learned over the years, is that once we open up this can of worms sort of emotionally, once we open our hearts a little bit to the reality of the kind of suffering that's going on for people like Dom in our world, then what we need to do is figure out one small response we can make, or what we're going to end up doing is just sort of packing all that back in and sort of trying to seal it down so we don't have to walk around feeling all that all the time. Right? So I want to encourage you to think about a response that you can make this morning. I'm actually going to give us a minute of silence. That may actually feel a little bit uncomfortable, and I'm going to encourage you actually to talk to God about this morning, to say, God, what would you have me do? How might I join you in your passion for justice? Just simple questions like that. Let me give you 1 minute to just think about what your response might be. I know this material is heavy, and especially if some of these things are new to you, so I just want to acknowledge that. But God doesn't invite us into these things to sort of destroy us emotionally. There's a way through this if we partner with God that actually leads to the abundant life that Jesus promised. And I think that's what Andrew is getting to experience. I think that's what Stephen is getting to experience. And certainly Dom's life has become much more abundant as a result of this work. The question I want to leave you with is, what is the story that God is writing in your life? What will be, as you look back, the surprising twists, the places where there's been just unexpected blessing, the places where God has come through? I can't wait to watch that story unfold with Brazos Point Fellowship further. Because someday I think we're going to have the opportunity to sit before a tribunal of our grandchildren. At least I hope we will, right? You can imagine them just sort of arrayed on the porch in front of you as you sit in your rocking chair in the twilight of your life. And they're going to be asking you all kinds of questions about what life was like before social media and all that kind of stuff. But I hope they will also ask questions like, Grandpa, where were you? Where were you when there was an epidemic of violence that was just devastating the world's poor? Where were you when there were 40 million people being enslaved around the world? Where were you when there were men and women and children that were being hauled off into fishing boats and sent far out to sea against their will? Where were you, Grandpa? And I hope what we'll be able to do is tell the miraculous story of what happened when we all came together, a story about Stephen, a story about Andrew, a story about Brazos Point Fellowship, and a story about Dom and thousands of others like him who were rescued from the hands of oppressive traffickers. But most importantly, a story of how we all said yes to the God of justice, who extravagantly exceeded our expectations and ended slavery in our lifetime. Let's pray. God, we are so grateful that you invite us into the things that matter to you in the world. That because they matter to you, we as your children, as your disciples, sort of receive this DNA from you and are able to engage in these things in meaningful ways. So we just ask, God, that you would show us how it is that you want us to engage this morning, this year, over the next few years. What is it that you are calling us to? And as we say yes, we ask, God, that you would be good to your promise, that you would continue to bless us, and that when we call out to you, you would say, here I am.
Kathy and I became Freedom Partners several years ago, and so have many of you. But some of you are agents of hope with True to Life Ministries. Some of you sponsor a child through the 410 Bridge or Compassion International. Some of you are foster parents. Some of you may be working with an initiative here in our community called Refuge for Women to create a safe place for women who've been rescued from human trafficking right here in our county and in the greater Houston area. None of us can do everything and do all these things, but all of us can do something. So if God prompts you this morning, and he will not prompt all of you, that's okay. But for those of you he is prompting this morning, you can fight slavery and help bring an end to it in our lifetime by becoming a Freedom Partner. And as Jim said, you can take that envelope that's in your program and fill that out. When you finish it, you can place it in the offering basket when it comes by, or you can carry it out to the IJM table, kind of over in the bistro table area at the back of our foyer. You're welcome to do that as well. So I encourage you to become a Freedom Partner if God is prompting you. But for all of you, even if he's not, I would encourage you to learn more about what's going on. Make yourself knowledgeable about this. Go to ijm.org, ijm.org, and watch some of the videos and learn and see what's going on around the world so that you can be more informed about what's happening and maybe recognize it when it happens here locally. And also, if you're a reader, we have some of the books called Just Courage by the founder of IJM, Gary Haugen, at the Guy Marks Resource Center. If you want to read about that and learn more about what's been going on in here. All of us can do something. We can't do everything. So as God leads and prompts you, do that. Let's pray. God, be with us as we make this decision to take our next step with you. Whatever that decision is, you may be using this to prompt us to do something else, but whatever, Father, help us to move forward wherever you want to mobilize us to bring your kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.